It's the Agriculture Show. It's your host, Jeff Steger at CKMS Radio 1.3 Sound FM today. Just delighted to have co-host Scott Lissel here again. Hi, Scott.
Hello, Jeff.
When's the last time it was this hot in the studio? What a change, eh?
Beautiful September day.
You aren't going down to the farm show. It'd be a hot day walking around there, I think.
It would be. Predicting rain for tomorrow.
So I'm glad you came in today. We're going to talk a little bit about two issues. I'm just downloading a file about the St. Jacobs fire and some of the comments from that. And we're going to also talk about trucking and specifically more about what kind of rigs farmers are hauling around the roads to haul produce and what kind of rigs are normally allowed to by Traffic Act and so on, the controversy there. So we have a great show lined up. Hope you stay tuned in. We'll start off as usual, play a few songs and little intros, then we'll be back with the rest of our show. We'll see you shortly.
Hi, I'm Sue B. Proud, and you're listening to The Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio, 100.3 Sound FM.
Instead of giving in, growing up instead of shedding my skin, you and I can change the world. A world of change is at the doorstep every day. But you can't be scared of change in any way, 'cause everything grows a bit each day. Yes, you and I are going to change the world. Yes, you and I are going to change the world. The more I learn, the more I see there is to know. But taking time to let the good times roll. Yes, you and I are going to change. Yeah, you and I are going to change. Trying hard to stare trouble in the eye. So side by side, and we'll find we've changed the world. And if you lend a hand, then I'll return in kind. It won't take long, you see, for you and me to find in the smallest way.
This is Mark Reeser. You are listening to CKMS Radio, 100.3 Sound FM. The Agricultural Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Federation represents the primary producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
Mobilizing the youth of today, educating them in a better way, training so they won't go astray. Hear what me say, yeah. Give your head to clearer thinking, loyal heart, got to be persevering. To the larger service, make your hands willing, your health for better living. 4-H, for community and country. 4-H, respond to food security. 4-H, I gotta make the best better.
All right. Good to see everyone today. It's the Agriculture Show. It's your host, Jeff Tager, with my co-host, Scott Lisso. And it's a very warm day, Scott. We're going to do a little bit of that before we chatted there. Hope your listeners enjoyed our little song at the beginning. That was by a band called the GMOs, Nero de Guelph. And these are people from the University of Guelph and so on. They go around on the rural circuit and play all kinds of songs about farm stuff, so it's kind of fun, a little promotion for a local band. As we mentioned before, we're going to work on two topics today. And the first one we're going to talk about is the St. Jacob's Market. And I think most people in Ontario probably heard that it burnt down. When was that, Scott? A week and a half ago now.
It was the long weekend, Labor Day weekend.
Okay. And so, that's right. So I think you're probably as impressed as I was at the amount of coverage there was. Like, it not only, of course, hit the local stuff, but it was on, you know, CTV and
Global,
CP24, yeah. All those things. The Kitchener Record, you get the Kitchener Record as well, Scott. And there was articles in there about from various perspectives about the farmers market. How important it was. The Premier showed up, who was also Minister of Agriculture, at the Saturday market following the burn. So the burn was Monday, Labor Day, right? And by Saturday, the market was scheduled for the Saturday, September 5th now. and there was press and politicians there. Oh. So
looking
Scott,
for the photo op.
Yeah. So you and I are going to try to do a little comment on that. But to help us out, I've gone online and secured the comments from the the Ontario Federation of Agriculture. So we'll listen to that. And this is President Mark Wales. And this is the some of the issues about the burning and then what's going to happen in the future from that. So just listen in, folks. We'll play that, then Scott and I will be back to kind of add some more, maybe whatever to it, I suppose. What we do, we talk about it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, hang on, folks. We'll play this little clip, and we'll be back with a bit more. See you in a bit.
Local agriculture suffered a devastating loss this month with a major fire at Ontario's St. Jacob's Farmers Market. The market's main food building, which opened in the late 1980s, and housed nearly 70 businesses, burned to the ground early in the morning on September 2nd, 2013. The St. Jacob's Market is Canada's largest year-round farmers market. Often, up to 150 vendors are at the market, representing a range of businesses from traditional farm commodities to boutique offerings. The market plays an integral role in connecting local farmers with local consumers. It also provides consumers access to local food and contributes to forming valuable relationships between consumers and farm families. Farmers markets play a key role in education as well. They provide opportunities for consumers of all ages to discuss food production and preparation with the farmers who grow the food. Vendors at many farmers markets may also offer lesser-known varieties of heirloom vegetables and animal breeds, which can add further value to consumers looking to add another dimension to their local food repertoire. The St. Jacob's Farmers Market is widely recognized for its impressive array of Ontario produce. The local food, tourism, artisans, and other businesses associated with the St. Jacob's Farmers Market are significant economic drivers for the Waterloo region. Losing access to these businesses will impact many in the area who rely on traffic and economic contributions from the businesses affected. For farmers at the market, the fire comes at a crucial time when fresh produce, such as peaches, tomatoes, peppers, and other fruits and vegetables, are at their peak during the busy harvest season. Fortunately, market administrators report that consumers will continue to have an opportunity to support the many vendors at the market. The outdoor portion of the market and the building known as Peddler's Village will be open for business as early as September 5th. Consumer support will be key to helping vendors move produce and get back to business. Some vendors who have alternative business locations are providing location information to consumers and are hopeful they will see continued support from their established customer base. The market has already announced plans to rebuild as quickly as possible, and the Township of Woolwich has pledged to work with the community and the owners to help reestablish the market as soon as possible. The Ontario Federation of Agriculture extends its sympathies to the businesses affected by the fire at St. Jacob's Farmers Market. The exceptional outpouring of support from the local community and in online forums, such as social media, is a testament to the bonds formed between consumers who are committed to local food and the vendors in attendance at the market each week. OFA encourages Ontario consumers to help our neighbors in this time of need. I'm Mark Wales, President of the Ontario Federation of Agriculture.
All right, that's our little clip, and that's from Mark Wales, President of the Federation of Agriculture. So I was scribbling down some stuff, Scott. Anything that comes to mind when we first started talking about it? What did you hear in that little clip?
Well, Mark was correct. For the seasonal produce, it certainly was bad timing. Couldn't happen at a worse time for a lot of those producers. But as he says, a lot of the outdoor vendors, it's going to be back in operation as quickly as possible for them, and they were open for the September 5th, so they actually didn't miss a Saturday.
Yeah.
And it is actually located in Woolwich Township, not actually in the city of Waterloo.
Yeah, that's something only you and I would know because we live here, right? But I think listeners from who aren't in the Waterloo region might mix it up a bit, yeah. So the rebuilding is probably what So there's two. I'm getting two messages from this thing like this. First of all, that's obviously that many people have a connection with the farmers market over the years, and so there's so much written about it. And right away was to talk about rebuilding. But they really want that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of tradition that was housed there, and for a lot of people, that was probably their usual Saturday outing to, mm-hmm. to the market for the seasonal produce and other fares that were sold there. So,
what we should be mentioning then too is that just why that's happening, and because it's been there for so long, it has become something where families have taken their kids who now take their kids, and it's a unique one-of type farmers market because there actually is a functioning cattle market next door.
Yeah, and Mark said that it was the largest year-round farmers market.
Yeah,
and it is open year-round, and even has the outdoor vendors in the less favorable season. So,
yeah.
But it is a year-round operation, which is kind of nice. Like for a lot of the indoor vendors in that, it was a mainstay of their business there for the Saturday vendors.
Mm-hmm. So, but I think it's the only farmers market where there actually is a farmer type thing. Well, the stockyards is there. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yes, yeah, the stockyards are next door.
Like there's Kensington markets in Toronto, and Cambridge has a farmers market, but none of them actually include something where you'd see
the stockyards and the actual trading of cattle and
or
animals.
No, it's a farmers market, but it there's a wider variety of farmers show up to this thing for things not necessarily just that. So it's so over the years it has become popular. It's established tradition, and as Mark pointed out in this thing, it has become a great opportunity for educating consumers, because the actual farmers are there and they can ask them, well, what's this variety of heirloom tomato, or how did you grow these chickens, and that kind of thing. It's actually educational value that people would not get at any other place, and it is also a great link to consumers, and there's no doubt that's true.
Yeah.
Boy, there's so many people have gone there and wondered about, I can ask, well, how did you do that maple syrup? How did you do this stuff? And because with only 2% of the population actually farming, it's pretty hard to get your message out on a one-to-one level with people, right?
So. Yeah, and it is actually open Thursdays and Saturdays year-round.
Yeah.
And correct me if I'm wrong, for the summer months, it's actually open the Tuesday.
Yeah.
So it's not just a one-day-a-week market. It's actually Thursday and Saturday year-round.
So why don't we just play a short song here, and then we'll talk about what do you want to talk a little bit about why it can't work? we kind of talked about this a little bit, about the difficulties with the fact that the land is so valuable and stuff like that.
Yeah, so the city moves out towards it.
Yeah, like I think we all agree that rebuilding is that's a good thing. But what makes it difficult? Just so people can, just for a conversation in our...
As the land values around it continually increase, and it's under increasing pressure from the surrounding
land uses. Yeah.
Land uses as they move out.
Yeah. So let's play a song, and we'll get into the other side of the coin here. I think we agree that we should rebuild it. Now we'll just have to talk about what would it require to rebuild it there, and why they should or shouldn't.
So, I guess we could hash that over.
Yeah, why don't we do that? We'll play a little tune, and then we'll be back with that in a minute. Okay, folks, stay tuned. This is episode number 64 of the Agriculture Show, and it's your host, Jeff Tigg, with my co-host, Scott Lissow. We'll be back in a moment.
Oof. We're not rebuilding. We're rebuilding.
Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And on this farm there was a chick, prettiest chick I know. with a little curve here and a little curve there. This chick, she had curves everywhere. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And oh, this chick, she had a walk, E-I-E-I-O. And how this walk would drive him wild, swinging to and fro, with a little wiggle here and a little wiggle there. Man, this chick had moves to spare. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. When she went walking into town, E-I-E-I-O. The local gentry popped their eyes. Carnation, what a show. With a gulp dang here and a gosh darn there. Heaven to Betsy, I do declare. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. There was a barn dance Saturday night, E-I-E-I-O. And the fellas came from miles around just to see her do-si-do. With a promenade here and a promenade there, at a square dance, man, this chick's no square. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. I used to be a traveling man, E-I-O. Until I hit MacDonald's place, things were mighty slow. With a little chick here and a little chick there, I didn't have a real chick anywhere. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. This farmer's daughter knocked me out, E-I-E-I-O. I asked MacDonald for her hand, and Pappy hollered go. With a little curve here and a little wiggle there, a gobdang here and a gosh darn there, a do-si-do here and a promenade there. I got my own private county fair. Had a farm, E-I-O-I. That's right, MacDonald. It's all or nothing, baby.
Hi, this is Angie Koch. You're listening to CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
Thanks for listening in, folks. It's Jeff Steger, your host, and with me is Scott Lissel. And today we're talking about the St. Jacob's Farmers Market, and we're going to talk a little bit more. Our first segment, we talked a little bit about, according to Mark Wales, president of the Federation of Agriculture, what that market is, what it does, and why people are going to it, and certainly a call for rebuilding it. And we're going to spend a little bit of time about some of the uphill battles when it comes to rebuilding that place. There's lots of them, but before we broke for this last song, Scott, you had mentioned the cost of that land and whether or not, basically, is the ownership, which is private.
Yeah, it's actually not a government operation. It's actually a private corporation that actually runs the market. The building that burned down, as Mark said, housed 70 different businesses.
Yeah. So, so the issue is that is this a private enterprise? Does it make sense to rebuild there or not? And you know, the problem is that it's open 3 days a week in the summer, and 2 days a week in the winter. And most land with the kind of value that location has up there, we're talking about shopping malls that are open 7 days a week.
Yeah, that would be their competition, would be stores that are actually open for business 7 days a week.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering what it would take for those. I think the owners know that it's a popular institution, and they would look really crappy if they had to sell it, but they got to make a living too. And I don't know what it's going to take for that to be rebuilt. As an interim measure, the owners in the paper had mentioned that they're going to put a big plastic dome up, almost the kind you'd see at a... in one of the more modern farm buildings, which are the mega domes.
A coverall style building?
Yeah, coverall style, which is typically can be, you know, 300 or 400 feet long or 500 in a great big hoop. So that'll keep the most of the elements off. It's a little bit more difficult to heat, but it certainly keeps the rain and the cold blast of winter away. It'll still get warmer. It'll be cold in there, but it won't be, you know.
Won't be like outside, right?
Yeah, not out in the parking lot. So it's going to be interesting to see how it works out. There's was some comment that, well, maybe through various government, there's numerous government programs out there at all times for various projects, and maybe some kind of a rebuilding of this could be included in that.
Some government funding, you're saying, could be made available to them?
Yeah, apparently. One of the things was that, I think it was John Malloy, our member of parliament in the area, who's in the government of the day, which is a Liberal government. He said they will. He's interested to see what, amongst all the various programs available in Ontario, which may qualify or be able to provide assistance for the rebuilding of something like St. Jacob's Market.
As a tourist attraction?
Something, yeah, you know, economic development, tourists, you name it. So there's a way to resolve the issue around, you know, whether or not it can be rebuilt and accomplish all the goals that it was supposed to have, what it does do. Which,
yeah, because as Mark said, that there's usually about 150 vendors at the market there, and a lot of them are local vendors and local farmers that are selling their produce and that there, and it'd be a terrible loss for them to lose such a place that benefits them so much for their sales.
And I think the property was insured, but insurance never is meant to. You know, you're still behind even with insurance. It doesn't blow up. So they rebuild that, it's going to be an expensive building. So should they really dump more money into that location? Because presumably that building would be last for a long time and be there. You know, you don't normally put a building up and then within 5 years change your plan. Not too often that happens.
So. No, it's a great opportunity for the local citizens and the local producers to exchange their wares there, and I think it should be rebuilt there. But as anything that's owned by a private corporation, they will make their decisions.
Yeah.
I think with the public support, it will be rebuilt, and that will be a benefit to everybody involved.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully the owners would have, they wouldn't press a point and say that we want help to the level of as if this was a retail shopping mall. Because that would be extraordinary amounts of money for them to maintain that land like the way it is. But the only other side issue is, so what do you think is the importance of the actual stockyards being there? I'm just going to throw out an idea here that, like, I maintain that the only reason why the St. Jacob's Market is not just yet another tourist trap is because there actually are farmers there with the stockyards. There's no other farmer's market where you can go and take a walk and watch a bunch of cattle overhead on the walkways and smell all those great smells, but you know you were there. It's a real thing. You go to even within the example of the owners of that property who also operate properties in downtown St. Jacobs, and those are farmers markets, but they're very close to being a tourist trap experience. you know what I mean? Because it's just a bunch of little boutiques and stuff in the area, right?
Yeah, I can see what you're trying to say there, yet, Jeff. Yeah, having the operational livestock farm gives it a different feel, a different appeal.
Yes.
But when they rebuild traditional, I guess, feel would have they to try and maintain that traditional farm market appeal to it, so it doesn't turn into another shopping mall.
Yeah. I got a notion it's going to end up being they'll put that temporary structure up and they'll be spending some time deciding what kind of building to do. And within 3 or 4 years, it had been mentioned before now that at some point the stockyards would move out of that location because the city has grown up around them and the stockyards belong to it in the country. Now they're going to have a hard time finding a spot with such good connections on the expressway for trucking. And like that's just off the
for the public access.
The public access, not only for assuming both markets go at the same time, the farmers market goes with the stockyards, Because you wouldn't take down the farmer's markets and need the stockyards.
No.
That's a total waste of time and energy.
I didn't realize that had been brought up at some point. But
yeah, it hasn't been mentioned, but it's owned by the same group of people.
Okay.
So you're not going to... You wouldn't have just a farmer's market there, and you wouldn't have just a livestock exchange. You got both. So when they had always talked about, they didn't know when they were going to move out of that location, but this could be the anniversary event that says, okay, it's now rather than sometime in the future, and until they find a place out of town that has the same links and tourist access for the market, producer access for the stockyards. And then you might see that, who knows, five months, 5 years, 15 years, you'll see that site converted back to city use, I think. I don't know.
It's hard to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be purely speculation on anybody's part.
Yeah, but like you say, it'll be up to the private ownership.
Yeah, with private ownership, it is their ball game. And they can make the decisions they need to. Hopefully they take into account what the public wants.
Well, that's always nice if they would.
Well, looking for the public support.
Okay, I think we did pretty good with that one, Scott. Why don't we play another song here, and then we'll get into the second part of our show today, which is about an issue in the countryside about how agricultural produce is transported. You listen to the Agriculture Show here on CKMS Radio 1.3 Sound FM, episode number 64, on this September the 10th of 2013, and a very warm September the 10th, 2013. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Subi Proud. This is my song, Can't Unpave the Parking Lot, on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
Thought they do, I a price for what we've leaves and fresh air.
Hi, I'm Rob Leone, the MPP for Cambridge and North Dumfries. You're listening to the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio, 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture.
Okay, and hats off to Rob for doing that. I always love it when the guests give a little promo, and I've got yours here too, Scott. I've played a couple of times. Thanks for doing that. So, folks, we're in segment number 3 of our show today here on episode number 64 in 2013, September the 10th. And our first two segments were about the issues around the St. Jacobs Market, a little bit from Provincial President Mark Wales and what their policy is, and Scott and I had a short little discussion after that. So in our second half of our show, we're going to talk about highway vehicles, and specifically about farm highway vehicles. So I'll set the stage a little bit about the background of this, and I'm glad Scott's in today because by occupation he is a trucker, so he is well aware of the problems on the road and how it looks and what can be done. So let me just set the stage with this. Basically, it happened probably in the last year. And it was the appearance on the road of non-traditional equipment that would normally be used to haul things like bulk grain and gravel and so on. And these non-traditional equipment are as a result of technology, which means that engineers can build tractors that are road stable at 50 kilometers an hour. But still field worthy. So these, but at the same time, they can drive down any road at 50 miles an hour and not get out of control because of the new engineering and suspended axles and so on. And the second part of this is that a lot of farmers are pretty handy with machinery, and if you got an old wagon sitting around, it's not that hard to make it bigger. So with that Rubik, they can get their welders going and create. Get a hold of used grain trailers, road grain trailers hauled by a tractor, and modify that so it can be pulled behind a tractor, these 50 mile tractors. So the result is that there's this new.
I think Jeff's trying to say is we're getting a blend of what was traditionally off road equipment, blending with traditional highway tractor equipment, to kind of. Combined into a mixed animal, where you'll have a set of highway trailers pulled by a non-traditional off-road farm tractor.
Now, this started, thanks for saying that, Scott. I was sort of getting there, but I know I just take a bit longer time in case I sort of get our audience up to speed here. But I'll jump right into it from what you just said there. In our own neighborhood here in Waterloo, remember they were using those to haul gravel from... down in Ayr on the Greenfield Road, they had the three rigs going up the road and dumping gravel where the new concrete plant is.
They were using off-road tractors with dump wagons
That typically
as a non-farm use for excavation for a construction site that was non-farm related. And that generated a lot of attention from the public.
And this migrated further into it's also technically possible, of course, to haul grain and corn and soybeans at harvest using the same machinery in somewhat more expected route, but not at those sorts of capacities and weights and so on. So this phenomenon has been happening for the last 3 or 4 years in Ontario, non-traditional rigs on the highway acting as highway rigs. What's has happened is this has drawn the attention of farmers, and is this legal? Is this okay? And it's drawn the attention of contractors who normally would fulfill those purposes, who are paying road tax and having to follow all the rules, to have their services taken over by operators who are not having to go by all those same rules. And The finally came to the Ontario Federation of Agriculture just last month in August. A subcommittee was struck, and they made their first report after having spent a year looking at it, and in a nutshell, they looked at the Highway Traffic Act and the Farm Implements Act, and to see what rules guided what can be used on the farm, when and where.
Yeah, and
so
one of the...
Let's go over those four or five items here,
yeah,
Scott.
Yeah, the public has noticed, and mainly because they've come across these on the highway, and the Ministry of Transportation has been getting some input from the public on this. But one of the things that came up was the slow-moving vehicle sign, the traditional right. orange triangle. And with that mounted on the rear of a vehicle, it is limited to the 40 kilometers per hour.
Okay.
And a lot of these tractors now and farm equipment can exceed that limit.
So let's start up a list here. We're going to go through about seven or eight things here. Let's do a yes or a no. So I'm going to check off X as far as that these new things shouldn't be allowed because of that. If they go over 40 miles an hour, they shouldn't
40 kilometers per hour.
40 kilometers per hour. So that's, I guess that's a half and half one. Even though machinery can go up to 50 and 60, or 50 anyway, if the operator was to maintain the throttle at 40 kilometers, it would still be legal.
Yes.
So it's one of those, okay, I'll put that
in. We got a gray area there.
We got a gray area, okay. So what's another
one? SMV, we'll put it as the SMV sign is only legitimate to 40 kilometers per hour.
Right, okay. I just thought of something else, too. Let me forget to talk about liability insurance, too, sometime here. I'm going to type that down. Okay, so our next thing about the Highway Traffic Act is that there's a suggestion that the law says you cannot be longer than 82 feet, combinations of farm equipment. So typically, drivers on the road will see that, where the typical thing is a tractor pulls a cultivator, and the combined length is, 50 feet maybe or something. But what's happening nowadays is you're seeing guys who are putting wagon after wagon after wagon, or maybe they've got like a combine with a grain with a header cart and a truck in behind, which just gets them around. So the Traffic Act says any combination of farm equipment can't be more than 82 feet. So there's kind of a gray area, too. So if these guys with these offending rigs are less than 82 feet, they're still legal.
They're still legal.
Yeah.
Still covered under the vehicle of husbandry, I believe.
Mm-hmm. You want to talk a little bit about the maximum weight on the road? Right now in Ontario, the weight load for the road is for one rig is 63,500 kilograms.
Kilograms.
So now is this? I got to keep track here of this stuff. I'm going to write down a listing here. It says weight. Do these rigs?
We'll just throw this in here for a second. That is the maximum allowable without a permit.
Right. Okay. All right.
Because there is specific permits for overweight in certain situations. So without a permit.
Okay. So there's another thing where that's the choice of the operator. That if they get too long, they have to get a permit. And who knows if they are or are not.
Yeah. Whether the MTO makes a blanket permit available to them if they're consistently over 82 feet, that will be something the Ministry of Transportation will have to look into. I'm pretty sure everybody has noticed that the size of combines and equipment has greatly increased over the years, making them more obvious on the road and more difficult for the average commuter to go around. Obviously, will create conflicts during certain periods of time during the day, and I think everybody has been on one side or other of that situation.
Yeah.
I think some people have seen where a tractor's been pulling like three gravity wagons behind it.
Yeah. Three and four.
Some people are overachieving.
That's true. So there's a situation where it's up to the operator to take these unusual rigs and make sure they comply with the law.
Yeah, and what you were originally talking about was a set of would-be traditional hopper B trains designed for on-highway use.
Yeah.
That some farmers have Instead of putting a highway tractor in front of, have put a converter on in front of the trailer, the lead trailer, and then hooked a large-size farm tractor in front of that.
Yeah.
And now they hang a SMV, slow-moving vehicle sign, on the rear of the trailer and proceed down the road.
Yeah. You know what? We gotta remember another thing. The age limit and permitting for drivers. So in Ontario, you have to be 16 to drive, and with restrictions until you eventually can drive by yourself. Restriction includes
graduated license system.
The Traffic Act for farm machinery is you just have to be 16. So you could theoretically have a 16-year-old driving a rig that weighs 40 or 50 ton and longer, too long and too fast. So that would be...
To make a brief point, you could take a normal on-highway set of hopper-bottom B trains or any train combination, take the highway tractor out from in front of it, roll in a set of converter dollies, hook a farm tractor in front of it, SMV sign on the back, and that 16-year-old now can go down the road without having any license plates or vehicle inspection up stickers on it.
Yeah.
Something he actually couldn't do until 18 with the actual AZ license for Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
But at 16, he could do that with an SMV sign.
Yeah, and the vehicle doesn't have to be inspected or not.
No.
With brakes and the like. And frame and so on, right?
What's the annual vehicle inspection.
Yeah.
That normal highway equipment has to go through.
Yeah.
To meet the actual licensing requirements and pay the associated licensing fee.
Mm-hmm.
Where the farm tractor does not. The licensing fee for a lot of highway tractors are a few thousand dollars.
Yeah. Yep.
So some of these guys are doing that just to save money and convenience because they have the farm tractor, and it just saves a lot of grief on their end. Administrative grief.
That's true. Further to this thing, before we take our break, is there's a suggestion of maximum weight, not just the total actually design limit of the weight, but the weight of the rig. So the manufacturer suggests that the load should only be 1.5 times the weight of the tractor to ensure stability, stopping stability, on the assumption of no brakes back there. The tractor must stop it.
Okay.
So that the tractor, it's got to be, the load can be only 1.5 times bigger than the tractor weight so as to provide relatively normal braking time and acceleration and control of the load.
In design specifications to the tractor.
Yeah. Now, strictly speaking, the tractor has enough power to pull 4 times its weight or more, because that's how tractors are built with the gearing and so on. But at that level, the load can push your power source all over the place.
Yeah.
On a hill or something.
A lot of the tractors now are designed so that when they hook to a traditional on-highway unit, mm-hmm. that they have the air capacity to activate the brakes on the highway equipment.
Right.
Which is basically what has led to them using these kinds of setups. The trouble is it hasn't been appropriately dealt with through the Ministry of Transportation, so it's become a bit of a gray area.
Mm-hmm.
But as it's become more prevalent, it's starting to get a lot more notice. And that, at some point, the ministry will have to have a look at it and make some decisions on it.
Mm-hmm. A couple last things, too. So at the moment, the police officers are familiar with the traffic laws, but not necessarily with the Farm Implement Act.
Yes.
Because obviously they don't deal with that too much unless you're actually always out in the countryside like that. So there's some educational things where officers are doing some arrests with the best of intentions, but
some enforcement.
yeah, for enforcement, but they if they don't know that, in fact, you can have up to 82 feet, then they would falsely charge you with something.
Yes.
Or if they didn't know all these laws of the Farm Implement Act, they would, with all intent, not do the proper charge. So there's some education there, and I think it's only the Ministry of Transportation. Who are those guys? You know, they look, inspect trailers. They're the ones that probably...
Yeah, Ministry of Transportation.
Yeah, they're the MTO. Ones that... MTO would be more the ones to be enforcing farm implement standards, you'd think.
Well, the police can. That's part of their mandate.
Yeah. So...
But the gray area, at some point, will have to be clarified. Because, you know, as somebody sees something, somebody doing something that's... more economical, that tendency will catch on.
Mm-hmm.
And using traditional off-road equipment on the road and in using what was originally designed as a vehicle of husbandry for commercial uses and falling into the gray area will need to be addressed by the ministry. To maybe even level the playing field for the traditional guys.
Yeah, truly. So we'll take a little break here, play a song. We'll go over some of these things and also maybe talk a little bit about liability issues here too, that certainly the insurance industry has a lot that would have a lot to say about this, and all farmers have to buy insurance. And, you know, I know in my place they make sure that your fuel tank is the right place in the basement, or else they won't cover you. And presumably, insurance company would say, you know, if you have a tractor go over 55 kilometers per hour, they would notify you, we're not covering you, so that the operators know that if they, in fact, did go over 40 kilometers with an SMV on, that they have,
Having a gray area with the Ministry of Transportation Administration is one thing. Having a gray area with your insurance company if something goes amiss is not really a good thing.
No. So let's play a song. We'll be back and finish up this discussion. It's Jeff Sager, your host, and my co-host is Scott Lissell. We'll be right back.
Rocking chair money. Now I got rocking chair money, but I got it the hard, hard way. I fought in every battle. Big check, baby, and then we'll have some fun. This rockin' chair money, honey, is better than toting a gun. Gonna love to rock, yeah, rock, baby, rock. Let's rock on down the line. Now, honey, let's go honky tonk. Let's honky tonk all night. Let's lollygag and smooch and love and do it all upright. Gonna love to rock, yeah, rock, baby, rock. Well, let's rock on down the line.
Hi, this is Nelson Rosales from World Accord. You're listening to The Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
Okay, thanks for listening in, folks. It's a warm afternoon. We're having Scott and I having a good time here talking about some farm issues. We're just into our last of our segments here. So we have listed off the various issues according to the Traffic Act about that impact farm machinery. And that was things like SMV signs, 40 mile kilometers or less per hour. The maximum length is at 80 feet, 82, and the maximum weight of roads is 63,000 without an extra permit. Age limits for driving a road are 16 with farm vehicles, but it could be 18 plus various licensing requirements for under the Traffic Act, and so you could have drivers less than that. And we wanted to do here was add a few more things. We got talking in between about liability and stuff, but let's look to other jurisdictions. What do they do in other parts of the world when it comes to these types of machineries? And if you look at Europe, they actually, where a lot of these tractors come from that are capable of these road speeds, they actually have air brakes, an air brake coupler on the back of them, so that, in fact, you could run an airline back to these big trailers and have air brakes, but the trailer had to have air brakes too. Also in Europe, you actually put a license plate on a tractor.
Oh, the tractors in Europe are actually licensed.
Yeah, so there's another opportunity to have them at some standard. You know, to be a licensed tractor, it has to have certain conditions, probably.
Yeah, I'm thinking most farmers would not want an extra administrative task like that.
Well, yeah, but you know,
lead to that.
Well, see, that's the thing. I got ahead of myself, but the whole point this came up to the Federation was not just because it bothered us a bit, but because it was somewhat felt that if we didn't address it with a committee and go over their deals, then other people beyond us would make decisions on our behalf.
Yeah,
it's better to be educated, know what's going on, and recommend or educate our members to appropriate driving than it would be to have someone from Toronto who doesn't know they make a law for us.
Yeah, push it so far that eventually the powers that be actually decides themselves and says yes or no. And
so the thinking is, hopefully, most farmers would say, you know what, I don't mind a little bit more licensing and paperwork if I can avoid
a whole lot more restrictions.
Yeah, that I have no input on. I get what you're saying, but you know, sometimes it's better to be a little bit
Proactive.
Yeah, a little proactive is always good.
And be in and on the discussion before somebody else tells you.
Exactly, and that's true for lots of things.
Yeah, maybe you can answer a question for me, Jeff. You have some of this other information here. What is the maximum width for farm equipment? You've talked about length.
Yeah, so you know what?
And weight.
Right. I believe it's 12, but you should really be placarded for that at that point. Like, I know most modern machinery folds up to road width, road lane width. The maximum load range, the maximum width of most roads per lane are 12 feet. So even though you're supposed to be only 8 feet wide is your limit of your vehicle, is going to be 8 feet wide, correct?
No, actually, they're allowed 102 inches.
Which is?
8.5 feet.
Okay.
8.5. I guess we better do the conversion here and make this metric.
Yeah. I think you can get the point, though, that you obviously can't build the road at 8.5 feet wide.
No.
You have to make it, you know, minimum of 10, hopefully 12 feet, maybe even 14 feet on that lane so that vehicle can, you know, have some give and go on surface and not infringe on the other lanes of traffic. And so I'm thinking that low-speed farm equipment under 40 kilometers an hour would take up some sort of minimum, maximum lane, paved lane width, which would be 12 feet.
Mm.
Not all the roads. But I'm only guessing, but
we'll have to look into that. We got a little bit of a gray area between us here, right?
But the point you're making
is there actually a specified maximum width for the farm machinery now?
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to look into that, see if we can get an answer on that.
Well, you know what? Offhand, I bet you there isn't, because farm machinery by nature fulfills so many obligations. What width would you pick?
Yeah.
It's not possible. Like if you're cutting hay or whether you're cultivating, you name it, you can't. Or combine or something, you can't have a maximum width.
We'll have to look into this.
Yeah. Well, all I know is what the manufacturers tend to make it possible to fold things in as narrow as possible.
Yeah.
So I think they're not. I've never seen any standard with the machinery yet. But
well, we'll We'll get back to you on this. Yeah.
go ahead. I'm not going to bother with it. But I guess the message there for our listeners is that what may seem obvious to an urban person that they should have this minimum width, not necessarily true for farm machinery because it's of its unique nature. Unique
yes.
Function.
Yes. It.
So it's quite possible that, in fact, there may be a maximum width, but probably not.
Okay.
Yeah. So what do you think, Scott? Do you think they're down the right track in having this committee and going over these things? We briefly discussed that, rather that the be proactive and get ahead of these things than to have something go really wrong and have all these crazy rules.
Well, I think a good thing would for the OFA would be to track down a lot of these rules and make the information available to their members.
I think it's a good idea. Education.
To clear up some of the gray areas because a lot of people would rather have somebody be proactive and look into this and make the information available to their members before the guy with the flashing lights gives them an education.
Mm-hmm.
At least that way they know what the rules are and where to find them. They have some defense if somebody does ask them these questions.
It always works well in life that if you can show due diligence or that you respond.
There's what I was looking for.
Yeah. So as a farm operator who may be operating some of these more controversial, larger
units,
that if you could show that, I'm staying within the recommended guidelines that...
Has done his due diligence.
Yeah, although there's a gray area, we're within the best we can.
Yeah.
At the time.
The current boundaries of the law.
Yeah. Because it's really going to be difficult. And it's not the job of the Federation to enforce these things, but it certainly is going to save a lot of grief if they get out there and just try to educate their members to have some thought about this and be aware of what they can or can't do on the road. So,
as we come closer into the harvest season, a lot of these things will be showing up on the road, and the urban commuters will be behind these some of these pieces of equipment and not always happy.
Now, the only reason why you wouldn't want to do anything, and there's a whole school of thought there, I'm not going to say it's right or wrong, is that, it's a business, and for the guy who can figure out a cheaper way of doing something, to him rests the appropriate profitability. And if you can move your product to market with a cheaper, then good for you. That is the whole point.
That is the whole point of business.
And so those individuals with that approach, it's perfectly right because and you don't want to have rules.
It may actually show everybody a better way of doing things.
Hmm.
But at the same time, the government is mandated to look at the safety of everybody's idea and to say whether it is appropriate.
They usually don't bother until something really goes wrong, then you get too many rules. But
usually they're sometimes when things go wrong, the government overreacts and implements way too many rules that have too much limitation.
Yeah. So, all right. So at this stage, the Federation has asked that committee to come back one more time just to fill in some odds and end questions. You in fact, has a good questionnaire there about with Scott, and I think some of the other members tonight. Committee were made aware of other kind of little details of it, but and what to do about it is still kind of floating around. Seems to be a slight trend to the as we discussed here that it ought to be educational to our membership rather than asking for new rules. It's just
yes,
tell our members.
No, but nobody needs really likes new rules.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe being proactive and informed of what the current rules are will save a lot of grief for. Some of the members.
And perhaps even the insurers of rural Ontario, the farm mutuals and so on, will have a little bit to say about this, too. They clearly can't, they're not going to extend insurance coverage to someone who is at the minimum above the limits, and they may have even more comment about what you can and can't do to protect their policies, too.
Yes.
so... Yeah, the job will be done. We're just looking at a way not too tough on everybody. Okay, so
too tough or too expensive?
That's right. So I guess we're pretty well covered everything on around the table here, Scott. I guess unless you want to go for another little break and talk a bit more, it looks like we're running out of gas pretty quickly.
Yeah.
It's really hot in our studio today. We've got the air conditioning going, but it's sort of having a tough time keeping up with this like mini heat spell we've gotten here in about 10 hours in Ontario, plus 30 degree temperatures on September 10th. It's quite summer, like almost July or August.
Yeah.
So just for our listeners' sake, we'll just kind of go over what we talked about today. Firstly, we talked about the St. Jacob's Market, what happened, and some possible outcomes there in our first two segments, the first half of our show. And now in this last half of our show, in two segments, we've been talking about the Highway Traffic Act and the Farm Implement Act in regards to the ever larger units that are showing on the road connected with agricultural activities, whether it's growing crops or whether it's moving commodities from place to place. So hopefully that was fun to everybody. And Scott, thanks so much for coming out today.
Oh, you're welcome, Jeff.
You know, he's a good go-to guy for this stuff. I have the good fortune of meeting lots of people that come in for guests, but Tuesday afternoon at 2 o'clock is a difficult time for most people. So we'll be back with some more shows later on this year. Keep listening. Be safe. Have a safe harvest, folks. It's episode number 64 today, and excuse me, we'll see you next week. Bye for now.